You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 8th episode of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined as always by Dante Guarneri. How are we doing today, Dante?
Pretty good. Good as always.
And we are finally wrapping up our division preview series today after we've covered the rest of the league except the Southwest Division. And in this division, we're coming off a season in which the Rockets disappointed, the Spurs, I don't think people realize really how good they were after they got bounced before the conference finals last year and what everyone was expecting to be a very exciting conference finals matchup. Dallas snuck into the playoffs again. Memphis was the walking hospital room, and then you have the Pelicans, who just have Anthony Davis and have struggled to build around him. But the idea that we really wanted to touch on with this division is just how important locker rooms are and the balance that they give to a team. This division has the best of both worlds in that sense, where you have San Antonio and Dallas, who you rarely hear any problems about unless Rajon Rondo is in Dallas. And then you have the Rockets, who were just a mess last year with Dwight Howard and James Harden butting heads and just a whole bunch of big egos running through that locker room. So, Dante, what I want to ask of you is just, How do you see the importance of locker rooms, and how does it impact this division?
Yeah, I think if you look at last season specifically, it really does demonstrate how important that leadership in the locker room is for an organization. Consider that everyone around the NBA and everyone interested in basketball wanted Houston to succeed. They thought that this offense was of the new age and that James Harden and Dwight Howard would work out so well. But unfortunately, under the coach and under you know, Daryl Morey and the organization as a whole, and working with Dwight Howard and James Harden and a number of pieces that didn't really have a good feel for a leadership position, the team struggled and they flailed, and that's why they were 41-41 instead of top of the Western Conference as they have been in years past. But then again, if you look at a team like Dallas, who probably wasn't that talented, was able to manage a 6 seed in the difficult West and finishing 7-3 in the end of their season there, it has a lot to do with someone like Rick Carlisle or like Dirk Nowitzki, who when they enter a room, their presence is felt and they command the room. And similar to San Antonio, having someone like Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich means a world to younger players who are trying to really settle in and adjust to the different lifestyle that is the NBA. And just considering the other two teams as well, Memphis, with all their injuries last year, couldn't really ever find their vocal leader. And as we see a transition out from the Zach Randolph era, it's going to be interesting to watch as Marc Gasol and Mike Conley try to decide who is going to be that person, who's going to be the locker room leader. Of course, adding Chandler Parsons into the mix only adds to that perhaps disruption in the locker room. And speaking to the Pelicans now, I guess the biggest thing about them and I guess why they were so disappointing last year was because they didn't have that vocal leader. Anthony Davis struggled, and instead of building his team up and trying to build around him, he very much took an isolation form of this game, and he took it upon himself to become that number one guy, and unfortunately he might have not been ready yet. And it showed a lot in his performance, and it showed overall as a team, finishing 30-52 at the bottom of the division and really looking like a team that struggled to get it together throughout the season. So throughout this division, it kind of speaks to different levels of leadership and how important it is to NBA organizations as a whole.
And now there are kind of changes coming about in the division as Tim Duncan departs from the Spurs. No one has any questions in terms of how their locker room will fit, because Pop is still there and they have just all sorts of stable, level-headed players throughout the locker room, whether it is Kawhi or Manu and Tony are still there, and then all the young guys they brought in, they just don't deal with troublemakers at all. And for the Rockets, you get rid of Dwight Howard, which kind of solves the whole ego problem between Harden and Howard. And now you're hearing great things out of camp and out of preseason games about the Rockets, about how Harden has really stepped up his game. Last year he came into the season a little out of shape, but now he's kind of stepping up as a leader after last year's disappointment. And he really has this team raring and ready to go, along with some new faces in Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson to bolster the offense. Not to mention Mike D'Antoni coming in to run the offense, and his dynamic with Harden is going to be very fascinating to watch, just because he of course had the 7 seconds or less Suns that did so well, and Harden's kind of the closest thing he's had to Nash in that sense, although completely different players, obviously. And with the Rockets and the Grizzlies last year, I think it was interesting just due to the fact that both of these teams, they have kind of troublemakers in their locker rooms, but the Rockets let it get the best of them. But Memphis, you didn't really hear any problems with in a locker room with Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, Matt Barnes, Chris Anderson, PJ Hairston, Lance Stevenson, all those personalities in one locker room, and they were able to kind of bond together. And that comes a lot from leadership and a lot from the coaching. And I think that might be improved in Houston this year. And like you said, when we're talking about New Orleans, Davis, you haven't heard too much about his leadership. He obviously wants to win, but he's also not been given kind of the tools to succeed, whether that's bad front office movement or just injury luck has not worked out their way. And that continues this year as they're planning to start Tim Frazier at the point guard, as Drew Holiday is with his wife after a brain tumor. So he could be gone for a while. Tyreek is already hurt, expected to miss a decent amount of time. And they lose Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. So this team is in limbo once again. They're only going to go as far as Anthony Davis can take them. And I think between him and Alvin Gentry, it's going to be key for them to kind of just have everyone buy in, because that's how they're going to be able to make the playoffs.
I don't have much else, though. That was good.
Okay. 7 minutes. Okay. And now we move on to...
Slow? Was that too little?
No. I just thought you were going to say something. But that's fine. I'll just move on and we'll cut this. Oh, I don't know if I cut that thing from last episode. Oh, well.
Oh, jeez.
Huh?
Oh, God. That was a mess.
And now we move on to our five burning questions for the Southwest Division. And first we begin with worst contract in the division. As we just talked about, there's been a lot of new faces coming into these clubs, and there certainly were some good contracts. One that I wanted to mention right off the bat, which has not gotten too much pub, is Seth Curry. I think he'll fit well under Carlisle as he wants a lot of his point guards. But let's talk about the bad. Solomon Hill got a lot of money. Ryan Anderson got a lot of money. Eric Gordon, Etuan Moore, Harrison Barnes, Mike Conley. Which of those names kind of sticks out to you as the worst?
Mike Conley's got to be my guy, because 5 years, $152 million is an absurd amount of money. Considering that contracts in the NBA are mostly guaranteed, he's getting $140 million in guaranteed money for a guy that, in my opinion, is not even in the top seven of point guards in this league. And we had this whole entire discussion last episode about how point guards are so integral to the roster and how you build the team around them. And quite frankly, I don't know if you can build a championship team starting with Mike Conley at the top. If you look at his numbers, he has never put up more than 17 points per game. He's never averaged more than 6.5 assists per game. His career numbers are wildly low as a whole, averaging 13.5, five and a half assists, and just 1.5 steals. It just to me he works really well as a point guard that services the needs of the baseline responsibilities. But as a locker room leader, don't know if he checks off that box. As someone that deserves a contract of his magnitude, I definitely don't think he deserves that spot. And really, I'm just blown away. You know, I obviously understand how the CBA works and how these contracts set up, where after 10 years and staying with the same team, you do receive this type of benefit. But the fact remains that a player like this should not be given this type of benefit in terms of contract numbers. And this is probably the worst contract I've ever seen.
Wow, that is... I don't... That is very bold. It's worst ever. I do agree with your sentiment, though, just because it is a lot of money. It had to be done, though, if you're Memphis, and just because you can't really replace that right away. It's just a ton of money to give to that sort of player. But let's kind of interrupt this question, because I think this brings up an interesting point about the CBA that I would like to kind of see changed, is just the fact that once you get to 10 years, you get the most amount of money when most players are past their prime. I think maybe that 7 to 10-year window is when you should be able to get that max amount of money, just because that's usually when players are in their prime. And that post-10-year run...
New York
City's
the best.
Oh, jeez. That post-10-year run kind of hurts teams, because chances are players aren't going to play to that level of production. Do you agree with me in terms of that?
I generally agree. I think, as the average age of an NBA player continues to drop down, I think it's hard to measure out where the prime ends, where the prime begins. And, you know, when you consider that, for the most part, at this point, a lot of these players after 10 years are just turning 30 for the most part. I think it is kind of fair that they do receive the most money at that point. I think that's, you know, the pinnacle of their career, the top point at which they do produce. And then, you know, to be quite frank, I do think it's all right that on the tail end of those deals, they are receiving more for what they are producing. But in exchange for that, you did get 14 years of service from them. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence in that regard. But I think when specifically talking about a player that is... for his career, averaged 13-6. You just cannot give $31 million away to someone like that.
All right. That you did bring up an interesting point, though, with just all that amount of service and how they gave them a bargain for a while, so I guess they deserve their amounts of money. But for my worst contract this offseason, I'm actually going to go with Ryan Anderson. I think he's going to actually fit quite well this year, which is an interesting way to phrase worst contract. But going forward in years 3, 4, 5, I think that contract is going to turn into an abomination. He can't do much outside of just scoring in this day and age, when so much is predicated on playmaking and being versatile defensively. He brings absolutely none of that, maybe one of the worst power forward defenders in the entire league. And he's not too young. I believe he's 28 or 29. And once that contract is over, the athleticism is kind of going to dwindle even more, which there wasn't much to begin with. So I just don't like that contract, not due to the number, but due to the number of years. Some other guys that I did want to mention in this, Solomon Hill, he got 4 years, $64 million, and that's quite expansive for his taste, just because he did have a pretty good little playoff run with Indiana, but I don't know if he's worth that much. Etuan Moore got a lot of money. I do like Etuan Moore. It might be a little bit much for him. And then the other one is just Harrison Barnes. Through the preseason, I think I saw a stat that he's shooting 21% from the field so far this preseason, although it'd be a small sample size. That's just not very good, especially when you're not getting the open shots that Golden State opens up for you. So there have been some not great contracts signed, as we expected with this rising cap. And
just to make a quick point about Solomon Hill, I think he's going to end up turning out to be a decent contract for what they're giving him. Right now, the 4 years, $52 million looks pretty ridiculous, and I tend to err on the side of cutting everything in half, as been suggested by big talking heads like Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe of the sorts. But right now, of course, it does look bad.
And we're going to transition here from the good to the bad. Which new player that's joining the division is going to bring the most value this season?
Yeah, I think just going off of what you were saying about Ryan Anderson, I think he's going to have the most immediate impact for a team, so long as he stays healthy, I suppose. And that's definitely been a concern for him. Just looking back at his games played throughout a season, he's never played a full season, only one time playing 81 games, and that was 4 years ago. So the health is definitely a concern, but I don't think he's ever been in a position where he can thrive as much as he will in the Houston offense, where he will be playing in that corner and he will be able to take as many shots as he wants coming off of the drive and kick from James Harden or pick and rolls between Harden and Capella. I'm interested to see how D'Antoni integrates Anderson into his 7 second or less system, and I just really do think that Ryan Anderson will have the greatest impact immediately of any new contract.
I'm gonna side with Chandler Parsons for this one, just because we've seen throughout, I think it's been 7 years of playoff success for the Grizzlies, and they've always been just kind of middle of the pack. And Chandler Parsons has always kind of been the guy that they've wanted, another playmaker, because Mike Conley can't make all the plays. He's a good shooter, which they've been lacking. The defense might be not too great, but there's no one better to side with that than Tony Allen. He protects you in all sorts of ways. So I think he's just an excellent fit. Him and Marc Gasol and Mike Conley are kind of a great starting off point. But the key obviously will be just him staying healthy. That's been kind of a huge concern for him, but if he's able to do that, I think he adds another dimension to the Grizzlies that we have yet to see from them. The next burning question we have is, who is your favorite foreign player in this division? This division is just kind of filled with them. You got Dirk and Bogut on the Mavericks. You have, I guess, Capella from the Rockets. Grizzlies, you got Gasol. And then, of course, the Spurs are just littered with them all over the place, with Manu and Tony still.
And another Gasol.
Yeah. Who is your favorite, Dante?
I'm gonna take the younger and currently better Gasol in Mark. I think as the leader now on this team, and in my opinion, as we spoke about earlier, he will end up taking that role. I think Parsons being the new guy is definitely going to use his voice as a source of leadership, but Marc Gasol is going to be that guy in the locker room that people turn to, hoping again that this is another guy that is very liable for injuries, and he's had difficulty in the past. But that being said, he's also had 4 different seasons where he's played at least 80 games, and he's never played under 50 games. So he's definitely a guy that has room for improvement on the offensive end in terms of just being more active and being more aggressive. But in the same way, he's taken on a huge role with the Spanish team, and as a foreigner, he's really become the guy and one of the premier players in this league. And in my own opinion, I really just appreciate a big man being able to pass as well as he does.
Yeah, I certainly love Marc Gasol. It's great to have him not injured anymore. He makes that team fun to watch, which is kind of hard with the grinding style when you have all this up-tempo flair. But Memphis should be getting that a little with Fizdale coming in. But my guy is going to be Dirk. He's been around for a while. It's kind of sad. His era of guy is starting to go. You got Duncan, Kobe, Garnett all retiring this year. Paul Pierce is going to go next year, but he hasn't announced anything, and we hope he has another 3 years or so left in him, because I can't remember too many more iconic shots than just his turnaround fadeaway. And I don't know if I'm going to live without that. He's such a talented offensive player. He's obviously not very athletic at this day and age, but he still brings some very talented offensive play. And he's kept this Mavericks franchise with Carlisle alive, continually making the playoffs, even though some people think they wouldn't be able to. But most of the credit is due to Dirk and Carlisle and kind of the relationship they've formed. And once he exits, it's going to surely be a sad time for all of us, because I don't know too many people who dislike Dirk. And our fourth burning question for this division: who will be the best team in 5 years? This division has some very, very talented players on each of these teams, but who do you think will be able to continually stay talented over the next 5 years?
I think it could be easy to pick a number of teams in this division just based on their organization, and I think I'm going to take a bit of an easy route here by saying San Antonio. Just looking at their consistent success over the past 16 years, since R.C. Buford and since Greg Popovich have come into this system, there hasn't been a better benchmark for success in the NBA than San Antonio. And I think that trend will continue, considering they have a guy like Kawhi Leonard. They have LaMarcus Aldridge locked up for a few more years. And they still have young guys like Patty Mills that are growing with the system. And they continue to churn out these draft picks that, for the most part, just fit within the system with ease. So I definitely think that in 5 years, we'll still be talking about the Spurs making their way to the top of the Southwest Division.
It's very tough to go against everything Spurs culture has kind of built up, but I'm going to go with the Pelicans just due to the fact that they have Anthony Davis. In 5 years' time, he very well could be the best player in the league. There were some questions about whether he was two years ago, but last year he was injured. He still put up great numbers, 24, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks a game. So he's still extremely talented, and he certainly has the potential to get to that point. And that's why I'm going to buy into the Pelicans. Obviously, that means I'm relying on their front office a little bit to actually give him some talent around him, but maybe Buddy Hield could be that guy. Cheick Diallo might be something.
Solomon Hill might be something.
Right, your boy.
Yeah. Holding out for him.
Yeah, but I certainly do think that they are going to be more interesting this year. I think they brought in some talent for sure. I do like Solomon Hill. I just think the price tag might have been a little steep, but I think they'll have an exciting pace, especially with Gentry this year, and hopefully in 5 years too, so that I can be correct. And our fifth and final question, who is going to be the next MVP to win the award in this division? The three obvious candidates, I think, here are Harden, Kawhi, and Anthony Davis. Whether it's this year, next year, 3 years from now, who do you think it's going to be, Dante?
Yeah, I hate to follow up my last answer with this one, but in my mind, Kawhi Leonard is the best player in this division and one of the best players in the league. And I think he's got one of the better chances to win the MVP because he isn't really competing with anyone else on his team, on overall, I guess. Offensively, obviously, LaMarcus Aldridge plays a huge role in their scheme, but defensively, he is the guy on the wing and even down low. So I think that you could consider Harden and how well the offense is going to run there. You can consider AD and what he's going to be able to do as the leader of that offense and defense in New Orleans. But at the end of the day, we've seen what Kawhi has already been able to do, and I think it's only going to get better.
I hate siding against Kawhi, but I'm actually going to go with James Harden because he is actually my MVP pick for this year. I think he's going to have an amazing year in that system. But I just thinking about it right now, Harden, Davis, and Kawhi, would you take them or the Warriors top three? Whoever you think is better out of Green or Thompson can be the third guy, because I think that's a very, very interesting debate.
Well, that is a good question. I think I would end up taking Harden, Kawhi, and Anthony Davis over Steph, KD, and Draymond. Perhaps from a fit, actually from a fit perspective, they both go really well. But I do think that the matchups work. We've seen what happens in that Kawhi KD matchup. But I do think that. Overall, with Anthony Davis there to back him up, it is a better trio.
I just thought it's extremely interesting because the Warriors, of course, Curry and KD are probably two of the top three players in the league, and then you'd probably say the three in the Southwest Division are the next best three on the court, and they're not far back from those two, and then Draymond or Clay, whoever you like more, is a little bit farther back, maybe a tier below that. Because these three, because the reason this came up in my head, I was trying to think of a division who has a better three players, and then it just led to one certain team.
One
funny
team
enough.
That had them all.
Yeah. But so as we end every podcast with, we're gonna think about how we feel this division is gonna finishing out, and I'll give it to you first, Dante, because that's what the people want.
I think it's interesting that this has been the only division that had four playoff teams last year. The possibility still lingers that there will be four teams again, and quite possibly, it'll get close to five. I think New Orleans will be competitive. At the top, it's got to be the Spurs. I think that just coming off of last year, they won't be as good, but you know, it's hard to be better than 40-1 at home. Going after that, I'd say Houston is definitely going to take a big bump. They were only one game behind Dallas and last year, and they've definitely improved. I think Memphis is going to stay at that third spot. I think they'll have a transitory period where they're trying to figure out their offense now, more so running through Gasol and Parsons than maybe Conley and Randolph as it was for most of last year. And then following that, I think Dallas slips in there with New Orleans just closely following.
Yeah, I had a tough time with this. I wanna put Houston above the Spurs, but I just know that'd be a dumb thing to do. So I'm gonna go Spurs number one, Houston number two. I'm a huge Houston believer this year. I think they're gonna be able to score a bunch of points, and if they can even just get up to mediocre defensively, I think that'll pay big dividends, and they could compete with the Spurs for sure. So I think they'll be up there, and then following that, I'd have to go with Memphis. I think if they're healthy, they're the fifth or sixth seed almost guaranteed, just because you know what you're going to get out of them. They're extremely smart, and that goes a long way in this league. Fourth, I will go with Dallas, just because Carlisle and Dirk just always seem to get it done, despite probably maybe even having the worst talent in this division. And then fifth, like you said, I don't think they'll either be competing for that eight seed or just outside of it. The Pelicans with Anthony Davis, as long as he is healthy as well. Any final closing thoughts on this division?
Not too many. I think it'll be interesting to see that MVP race play out within this division. I think there's definitely a chance that Kawhi can double down and get both the MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. And I'm really excited to see how Anthony Davis has improved, if he has, because that team is so reliant on his ability to consistently produce. And I'm also looking forward to seeing Buddy Hield play a bit this year. So it's going to be a good division for sure.
Well, yeah, and each of these guys, Davis, Leonard, and Harden, are plus 1,000 for the MVP award, according to Bovada. So they're tied for fourth for that award behind Westbrook, Curry, LeBron, and tied with KD. So there's a decent chance that we see the MVP come out of this Southwest division for sure. I don't have too much more to add. I just want to reiterate the fact that I'm on the Rockets bandwagon, and hopefully they don't let people down. I know Zach Lowe last year was very disappointed. He's picked them to actually win the championship last year. So I guess I'm following in his footsteps, which might lead me into a dark place, but I think it'll be interesting for sure. And next up, we're gonna be doing our conference power rankings, basically. Our MVP, our All-NBA picks. We'll probably have that out Monday morning or Monday-ish before the season starts Tuesday. It's finally here. It's really right there, and it's been a long off season, but I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, and I'm glad we had a part of it for at least some people, and getting to talk about all these different teams and divisions.
Yes, absolutely. So you can read all of the quality stuff on Last Word on Pro Basketball. You can find the rest of our podcast episodes there. Follow us on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod, the number two, not the word. You can follow me on Twitter at @A_Craycraft. Dante, just go look for his in our podcast Twitter bio. I guess that's just going to be the go-to. And we will talk to you guys next week.